Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Let's get to last night's game. Ramos, you're a Rams fan. What's your big takeaway from Monday Night Football? What looks like a 24-10 dominant performance in the game?
My takeaway would be that the defense is starting to gel a lot better.
Okay. I think the defense was pretty good. I think Jalen Ramsey has thrown himself into the fray. I love the sale of, like, this is where I feel like Brian Griese is not a young analyst. He has been doing this a long time, but I felt like they kind of got sold. Like, well, they moved Jalen Ramsey in the slot because it sets the tone. Like, that's not what you do. And if you saw, he got toasted deep twice. Guys wide open, and Foles overthrew one time and underthrew Bradley another time. Late in the game, when the only thing you should in your mind as a cornerback should be, I don't get beat deep. He got beat deep, and Nick Foles didn't deliver. But I would agree with you. I think the defense is pretty good. How's the punting?
Well, Johnny Heckler is one of the best punters in the NFL. I mean, awesome.
It was
the
awesome.
Last was what, three punts? He put him like the 5-yard line.
I think it was four inside the 10.
Yeah, he was good.
Was it five or four? Five inside the 10. That's remarkable. Like, okay. So Sean McVay was seen as this offensive boy wonder, right? Wasn't that the sale of Sean McVay? And my takeaway from Monday Night Football is this. There's a reason that people around the NFL have tried to hire anybody who had brunch once with Sean McVay. That dude can coach football. He understands. He's hired good people. He hired Wade Phillips, and then Wade Phillips, he has the ceiling everywhere he is. There's like 2 years, then it kind of runs a little bit stale. People start to figure it out a little bit. And so he moved on from Wade Phillips. And oh yeah, by the way, it was important that he hired Wade when he got the job because Wade was the oldest assistant and he was the youngest head coach. He needed kind of some balance in the middle. It's kind of like when you have those asparagus spears and you go to get a big steak, right? There's that balancing thing. Something that's really good for you and something that's really bad for you. And you balance it out and meet kind of in the middle. So this is now his staff. And is it a perfect team? No, right? Like they're still paying their penance for the Todd Gurley contract. They had to overpay for whether it's Jalen Ramsey. And as great as Aaron Donald is, and he can dominate a game and free up everybody else in the defensive line to do whatever they want, the fact is that you had to pay him more than anybody else at his position, not even close, in the NFL, and there's going to be some holes because of it. They'd have to rework their defensive backfield. Their linebacking core is not great. Like, this is not a perfect team. And I don't think Jared Goff is a perfect quarterback, and he hasn't played well at times this year. He didn't play well at times last year. But in the most difficult division in football, in a season where they've had to kind of figure out, trial by fire, their running backs, the defense is starting to really come together. It was a sore spot. The offensive line isn't terrible, and that's a good defensive front for the Chicago Bears. And they're finding ways to continue to win games. Like, I don't know, my takeaway is that's a really well-coached football team. Right? Figure out a way to win this week, and then do it again next week. The LA Rams are 5-2 on the season. Are they a great team? I don't know. But I can tell you this, that the Chicago Bears came in at 5-1 on the season. Their losses are to the Niners and to the Bills, two playoff teams. Right? I don't know if the Niners will be a playoff team because of all the injuries, and I know that they played them banged up, but like I'm looking at Miami next week. That's a win for the Rams. Then they have a bye, and then they'll hop into Seattle. They still have Seattle and Tampa and San Francisco. They got an incredible, like, murderer's row of schedule before they get to New England and the Jets later in the season. But I don't know. My takeaway is there's a discernible difference in the quality of coaching from the Rams and even the Bears, who I like. And I know that staff, and I like that staff. But whether it's offensively, whether it's special teams, and, like, the Hecker thing, I mean, some of that's the kind of luck of the draw. You get the punter. But whatever, like, they have made some really good decisions. They have figured out ways to win games. They're figuring out a way to make Jared Goff more successful, putting him under center and taking him out of the shotgun. They figured out a way to get a running game, and they're figuring it out. And that's, like, the two things on coaching, which we kind of talked about yesterday, is you can tell if the team plays hard and if they're figuring it out as the game goes along how to kind of crack the code and beat the other team. That wasn't a virtuoso. It was a 10-3 game for a long time. Bears were very much in it. And kind of a crazy play on a bang-bang interception changed the game in the end zone. If not for that, I don't know what the final score is. But I watched last year, and Goff was not good. Gurley was a mess. The offensive line was shaky at best as they tried to replace a couple of players. They're working, and they're coming off a Super Bowl hangover. And one of the things about the Super Bowl is it really kicks your butt. Emotionally, mentally, like, there's a reason teams that lose in the Super Bowl struggle so much, or teams that play struggle so much outside the Patriots struggle so much the next year. And they were, if the format stuck, they were from this year to last year, they were a playoff team. And oh yeah, by the way, even without the format, if one play goes different at the end of the Niners Seahawks game, right? Like, they're right there. So my big takeaway is we spent a year trying to convince ourselves that Sean McVay isn't as good as everybody thinks he is. And I keep watching and watching that coaching staff and watching what he's doing and understanding that that team is good in three phases, especially special teams and getting better in defense. And they just figure it out on offense. I think he's a spectacular coach. I think that was mostly a coaching win, somewhat a personnel win with Aaron Donald. He's just a monster, and so it makes it easier for other people to be monsters.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Chris Sims joins us, NBC Sports Sunday Night, Football Night in America. Chris, what do you think of what Greasy said that Foles told him?
Oh, well, okay. So there's two things. I mean, I think the first thing is, you know, I took it originally, and, you know, Nick Foles kind of took it a different area when he answered the question. But when I heard Greasy say it originally, and then even the question asked to Nick Foles during the press conference, you know, really, I thought when he was talking about not enough time to do, you know, without paraphrasing here, I thought it was more talking about the play call itself is not getting in quick enough. And maybe I have two play calls to call, and I got to figure it out at the line of scrimmage, but I'm in the huddle at 18 seconds just getting the play, and then what's being asked of me to get into the right play at the line of scrimmage, there's not enough time because the play call took too long to get in it. Now, maybe he was referring to, you know, I don't have enough time to let some of these concepts to develop because our offensive line stinks, and I don't have the time to throw those type of passes. But that's what I originally took it as. You know, I feel like Nick Foles kind of answered it the other way to kind of cover his butt with the head coach because, yeah, I mean, Greasy kind of broke protocol there. I think, or at least just from the outside looking in, it looks like that was a little bit of a quarterback-to-quarterback private conversation, just letting him in on what's going on. And, you know, for whatever reason, Brian shared that on the telecast, and now it's going to be a little bit of a talking point.
Yeah, I felt like, and again, you tell me, you've actually been in those meetings on both sides of them. That's why you're the perfect guy to have on here. Chris Sims, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show. I feel like what Greasy should have done was he should have made it his opinion. Like,
exactly.
Right? Where you, it's one of those deals where you go like, hey, you know, look, I think with their offensive line issues, Nagy sometimes calls plays where it feels like Foles, he didn't have the time. It's not necessarily in the play. It's not necessarily in Foles. It's kind of all of it not working together. So it ain't going to work from the time that it's called. And that's a really tough, I've been there. It's a tough place to be as a quarterback. Like, that's how you're supposed to do it to cover for Foles, right?
No doubt. Yes. You.
And now they're not going to tell you anything. Now,
right,
Greasy ain't going to get, no one's going to tell Greasy nothing.
No, yeah, you're right. He's probably going to get the cold shoulder and a lot of, like, you know, under-the-radar conversations or anything like that from here on out. You know, I know Brian Greasy had played with him. He certainly didn't want to, you know, hurt anybody or do damage to any situation that way. And I think you're exactly right. You get information and you don't ever want to kind of attribute it to anybody. That's, you know, even in my job right now, I say things and I go, well, I know the answer. I've had a coach tell me, but I'm going to play it off as, hey, I've watched this on film and this bothers me, or I like this, or whatever it is.
Right, right, right.
That's kind of what you have to do.
Yep. Great stuff. Chris Sims joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. I felt like, all that said, Foles missed a couple of throws. But my takeaway from the game might be different than yours. I think Sean McVay is a hell of a coach because, like the special teams is really good. Some of that is just the punter, but you got excellent special teams. The defense is coming along and they're finding ways to plug some of those holes. And the offense has limitations, and yet they still find a way to be effective. And, you know, putting Goff under center more is one of the big ways, running the football and the way they run it. Like, my takeaway is we kind of jumped off the McVay bandwagon a little bit too soon nationally.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. I mean, we saw a few, you know, issues last year with their football team. Certainly, I was one that would go, ooh, I think he might need to at least reinvent himself a little bit, add a few new wrinkles to the offense.
Yep.
I feel like people have caught on a little bit. But he really hasn't added much more to the offense. They're doing the same old thing. It's just, I think, what you said. First off, they're better at running the football. He is a great play caller, sequence of play caller. He understands how to set up plays. And he understands when, ooh, wait, they're overplaying this play too much, and here's this other play now to keep you honest. But I go back to what you originally said, and I totally agree. It's how I started the show this morning with Flory on Pro Football Talk. Was I said the thing, you know, McVay, McGenius, Kid Genius, whatever the hell you want to call him, is just one hell of a football coach. And he doesn't get too obsessed with his offense, even though that's his little baby and his pet project, and he wants it to always do well and put up big numbers and points. I love him because I think of what you're saying, his ability to manage the football game, and then at some point just go, okay, you know what, I'm playing a good defense today. I'm not going to be stubborn or narcissistic and just try to, you know, oh, yeah, we put up a lot of yards, but we turned over the ball and scored some points and all that. No. He realized the other team had offensive issues. He realizes that his defense is very sound. And he played the conservative on offense and we'll play defense and field position game against the Bears because I think he realized the only way we're going to lose this game is if my offense screws this up against their defense. And that's where I really give him a lot of credit. He is. He's one of the best coaches in the NFL, no doubt about it.
This is the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Is Cam Newton fixable?
He is fixable. He is. You know, there is a few little technique issues that I've always seen with Cam Newton come up throughout his career. And he's stuck in them a little bit right now where he gets his left shoulder real hiked up, real high. It looks like it's such a high-effort throw. And I always say this is the thing I have to look for. If he's standing in the middle of the clock and he's got to throw to 12 o'clock, he's stepping at 9 o'clock to throw to 12 o'clock. That's going to leave you off target. They have issues at the receiver position, as you know, and the game got away from them last week. So then they don't get to be able to run and use his quarterback design runs and then all the cool passes they have off of it. You know, they have to play a certain style. And that was a bad matchup for them with the 49ers, who can run the ball on anybody. And the Patriots, they're all secondary. They have no D tackles. They don't have great linebackers. So that's where it was really tough. But, you know, I'll say this just to put it in all perspective, because I know it was a bad loss, certainly. But I still look at the Patriots, and I'm not counting them out yet. They had the Chiefs on the rope without their best player. If Cam Newton's there, I'd like to think they win that football game. Last week against Denver, it wasn't like they were physically blown off the field. They just made mistakes. They were rusty. They kind of shot themselves in the foot. I didn't come away from the game going, ooh, there's major issues with the Patriots. There's weaknesses here and there. I knew what they were. This last week was really bad, certainly, but the defense let the game get away from them. You know, it was three and out. It was interception on the first play. It was three and out, and all of a sudden it was 23-3, and they were losing the football game. And there's no way they're going to come back with that receiving core and Edelman being banged up and everything right now.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Chris Sims. You see him on Sunday Night Football, Football Night in America. You hear see him on NBC Sports and NBC Sports Network. I really, really, really liked what I saw from Tampa, but I wonder if more is more. Now, you lose Godwin, you add Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
That all works, but does it make them better to add Antonio Brown at this point in time?
Well, it's I understand the question. It's risky and all that. I get it. I think there's two things they have in their favor, just as far as why I think it'll work. One is Tom Brady, his experience. Oh, Jonesy, no. His experience with Antonio Brown gives them a great ability to make that work, right? And then the other thing I would say to that is Antonio Brown's on his last strike.
Yep.
So, I mean, if he screws this up, then I don't know what else to say. I just go, well, damn, I don't know, man. You don't deserve to play. You know, the writing's on the wall. I think more or less, hey, yeah, more is more weapons. But they realize they have a Super Bowl team. They've had injuries at the receiver position all year long. And I think they're more looking at it as like, man, what if Mike Evans has still a pulled hamstring in week 15 and then, Godwin has some other issue, breaks another finger or whatever. Wow, that'll really hurt our chances as a football team. And I think it's a little bit of, add to the weaponry, but also an insurance policy kind of all in one. But, Doug, I'll go back to what you said there. They're the best team in the NFC. There's no doubt about that in my mind right now. They are. There's really very little weakness with the football team. They continue to get better every week. And, if you made me pick right now in the NFC, I'd go, the Buccaneers are going to the Super Bowl.
DK Metcalf. You ever see anything like that?
No. I mean, there's not a lot of people on earth that are built like DK Metcalf. That's a special, special specimen. I mean, for him to run him down that way, crazy. I'll say this about the game. Patrick Peterson did a pretty good job on DK Metcalf. They matched him up quite often with him. But I'll blame Russell Wilson more than anything for DK Metcalf's lack of production in the football game. You can't let anybody play one-on-one against DK Metcalf. There was plenty of opportunities during the game where Russell went to one side and I went, man, if he throws it to DK Metcalf on the other side, it's going to be a 60-yard gain. It's going to be a 30-yard gain. I don't know why he wasn't on his radar this game, but that was an injustice to the Seahawks and DK Metcalf itself, to where you just can't let people play DK Metcalf like that. You got to abuse it all day, like you saw Rodgers do with Devontae Adams. Oh, you want to keep playing man-to-man? I'll keep going back to the well. I'll throw bullseyes. He'll beat your guy man-to-man every time, and we'll be unstoppable. And then they should kind of follow that same, formula as they go along, too.
Awesome stuff, Chris. I don't know what your child was doing, but I'm hoping it didn't. It was not finger in a socket or something like that, right?
No, it was nothing. It was actually my great cleaning lady, Josie, was about to turn the vacuum on in the room during the interview.
So Josie, 1 minute.
Yeah.
One minute. Thanks so much, Chris. Really appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Be good. I'll talk to you next week.
That's my guy, Chris Sims. Just he's awesome and gives you a real sense of, that's the whole thing. You're Brian Greasy now. Good luck anybody telling you what's going on the rest of the day, the rest of the year.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Jerry Jones has got some issues on his hands. This is Jerry Jones. Earlier today, when he was questioned on 105.3 The Fan in DFW about the leadership void in his team.
Does your team have a leadership void?
We're in the offensive line.
Just overall, when these...
But seriously, where would you have a leadership void? Is it an experience void? Is it a talent void? Is it a leadership void? I'm not trying to be cute here. The answer is no. The answer is no.
I'm asking...
Shut up and let me answer it. No.
A little testy there. Well, shut up and let me answer it. Again... who are those guys? I think I know who those guys are. I just want to make sure, because they've switched. Is that Shannon RJ? Those guys are really good guys. Okay. But I'm going to be critical of them in that, again, what happens is you end up answering the trigger word. What is the trigger word there, guys? The trigger word is void. Or do you, he asks a yes, no question. Whereas, and RJ is a good, both those guys I know really well. Would they probably, the better wording would be, Jerry, what do you what are your thoughts on the leadership of your team? If he says, well, you know, the experience, there's lack of experience there, so you don't have experience, like, well, you know, like, is there a void there? How, you know, or also you can, I don't like the either or, but you have to point out the fact that how much has to do with injuries? How much has to do with lack of experience? How much of it is the personalities that you have or the contracts that were given out, right? But if you start with the, what are your thoughts on the leadership of your team? What happens is when you make statements and there's a statement made, basically you're saying there's a leadership void. And then you're going, what do you think of the leadership void of the team? Like, well, that's, you're stating your opinion. It doesn't mean that the opinion is wrong, but when you're stating your opinion, I become defensive. That's when you get home, if somebody says, why are you in a bad mood? I'm not in a bad mood. But it puts you in a bad mood because you're like, well, I'm not in a bad mood, right? You automatically become defensive. So I believe that the question screwed the whole thing up. Here's Jerry Jones when asked about his head coach.
If I were going to hire a head coach that were going to be at this stage this year and work through this for the betterment of what's in store for us for the rest of the year and for what's for us in the future, I got my man.
Okay, so look, here's the thing with Mike McCarthy. He looks good on paper, right? I mean, this is the thing with dating. Right? Looks good on paper. Dude looks really good on paper. Then you're like, something's missing. She looks really good on paper. I've never been on these dating apps, right? But the dating apps are like, oh, he's good looking. Meet him and okay. Not in a relationship, you know, has a job, has insurance, doesn't seem to be needy, has all their teeth, functioning teeth, right? Not like over the top political, over the top religious, you know, all right, something's missing. Mike McCarthy is perfect on paper. Coaching experience, check. Super Bowl experience, check. Worked with a superstar quarterback, check. Worked in a high level organization, check. All right, check. Work with, you know, other successful organizations, check. Develop young players, check. You know, like you go through all these different things. Okay with working for Jerry Jones, check. That's part of it. Okay with working with our current offensive staff, Kellen Moore, who is already there, check. Checks a bunch of boxes. But like in relationships, sometimes there's just not something there. There's just not that spark there, right? Like he's good looking, she's good looking. The conversation's fine. Maybe conversation's even good. It's just like not there. Two people don't into each other. Or at least, you know? That's the same thing with the players just aren't into him. Isn't there a TV show? Isn't there a movie like that? He's just not that into you, right? That's all it is. Like, hey, Jerry, they're just not into him. Sorry. Like, Jason Garrett may not have been a great coach. He may not have been that inspiring leader, but hey, he was a quarterback with the Cowboys. He knew how to deal with you. He's a little younger, in good shape. You know, knew how to, was apparently more relatable. It worked better. This one ain't working. You can keep going on dates. You can keep taking him to nice restaurants. But unless there's that spark, that magic, that feeling, it ain't ever going to happen. Mike McCarthy looks good on paper. Looks good on paper. Teams are much the same way. You know, something is missing there. And to me, it's a lack of emotional investment in the players. Is it because of the makeup of the players? Is it because of a leadership void? Is it because they've had massive injuries in their offensive line, which there's some tremendous leaders there? Is it losing your leader as your quarterback? Maybe. You know, is it that Mike Nolan hadn't been a defensive coordinator in a while and his style, and he was formerly a head coach, but he wasn't, and the The defenses now have changed and evolved, and he's a little bit behind the curve. All of that, fine. But the fact is that DK Metcalf has shown more effort on one play on defense. DK Metcalf, by the way, is the wide receiver for the Seattle Seahawks who chased down Buda Baker, right, in what is one of the most impressive athletic and effort plays in the NFL in years. DK Metcalf has shown more effort on the defense side of the ball than the Cowboys have. And he did it in one play. Something's missing. And Jerry's defensive because he knows it and because of the way the questions are asked. Otherwise, he would have painted himself in a corner and he would have basically described what we all know to be true. Shannon and RJ are right. Like, there is a leadership void, but the leadership starts at the top.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Nate Bjorkgren joins us. He's the new head coach of the Indiana Pacers. Coach, how are you?
Very good. Very good. Thank you for having me.
What's this been like?
It's been great. It's been busy, which is what the job entails, but I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed talking to the players and texting with the players, and I'm overlooking our practice facility right now, and it's a big-time place here in Indiana. I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, to be the head coach of the pro team in the state where basketball is the sport, that's there's only 30 jobs, but that's a pretty remarkable first job.
Absolutely, you're exactly right with Indiana basketball, and I know my kids are really itching to make the move and get here, and they're young, and just to be a part of everything that basketball entails in this state. You're exactly right.
Yeah, when somebody asks you Indiana or Purdue, or Butler, your answer is yes, right? That's got to be the answer. The answer is yes. Your path is really fascinating to me. You began playing college basketball at University of South Dakota, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Who was your head coach?
His name was Dave Boots.
And you were in Iowa, but why South Dakota? How does somebody go like, hey, do you want to come to South Dakota to play? Where can I get a place that's colder than where I grew up?
Well, you know who my assistant coach was at South Dakota.
I do. I want to get to that in a second, but go ahead.
Okay, you got it. Well, I really wanted to play college basketball,
sure,
and thought I was a Division I, Division II player. I was not, but I wanted to give it my best shot, so I played there for a year. I ended up transferring out of there, but I was always fortunate to play for very good coaches in high school and college and you name it. And that just helped me kind of love the game even more and want to coach it.
What did you guys run? What do you remember about playing South Dakota? What was your offensive style?
You know what I remember about South Dakota? This is the most, I don't remember much offensively, but defensively, I just remember like running a matchup 2-3 zone. And that was kind of the first time I was experienced to that kind of defense. And that's my big memory from that year.
Huh. Well, matchup zone. I just, anytime we played zone in college, I had no idea what I was not. We didn't play zone in high school. I didn't play it for my dad in AAU. I played for 1 year for John McLeod, and we ran a zone twice. We practiced the day before both times, and it was against Georgetown. It's because, like, you can't guard Allen Iverson. I was like, no, I cannot. So let's go 2-3 zone and hope he misses. So then you transferred back home, right, to Buena Vista University?
Correct, which was a Division III school there in Iowa where I played, again, for a very good coach. His name was Brian Van Haften, a very successful small college coach. And again, it allowed it to grow more and more. We had good teams, and it was a lot of fun.
You mentioned your assistant coach at South Dakota. That's Nick Nurse. I don't know if you know this, but I played for Nick. He was an assistant with the Oklahoma Storm. He was coaching, I think, Birmingham in England.
Yes.
And he came over and he was our assistant. He joined us like a couple games in. Kareem was our head coach. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was our head coach. Yep. And Nick Nurse was our assistant coach.
I was hoping you were going to bring that up, man. I love that you played there. He speaks of those days and his minor league days all the time. But obviously that was before him and I started coaching together. But I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, no,
but
no.
I was hoping you brought that up.
Okay, so you get done playing, right?
Yep.
And in your mind at the time, you're like, I want to be a high school coach. I want to be a college coach. What was in your mind?
Yeah, I wanted to be a head coach right away is what was in my mind. I just, again, I enjoyed my playing days in high school and college, and that was going to be the extent of my playing days. And I wanted to coach. I wanted to run my own team. And I started as an assistant in high school, but then I was a head coach at age 23 or 24 and enjoyed every second of it.
How did you get to be with Nick again with the Iowa Energy?
Yeah, so what happened was when I transferred out of South Dakota, he then went overseas for 9 or 10 years, and I was coaching high school basketball in Iowa and in Arizona for about those 8 or 9 years as well. Then the Iowa Energy, which was a D-League expansion team, was coming to Des Moines, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And I was calling Coach Nurse and texting him, emailing him, you name it. I wanted to be a part of pro basketball. And at that time in the D-League, you only had one assistant coach that was paid, and he already had his lead assistant. But he said, if you want to come volunteer, he goes, you can come. I continued to bug him and bug him, and I showed up at his front door, and I was his volunteer assistant that first year. That was 14 years ago.
Okay, so but how do you make it work financially as a volunteer assistant?
Well, I had a little bit money saved up from my teaching and coaching days, you know, in Iowa and Arizona. So I did, and then that money went away quickly because I drove myself to the road games. I was substitute teaching to try to make a little bit of money. I even bought my own plane tickets to go to a couple road games. But it was all worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it is all worth it. Okay, from Iowa, then you go to the Dakota Wizards. You're the head coach, right? So,
yep.
So, like you would, but this is different for you than from other people because so many times guys are assistants their whole lives, then they finally get that head coaching job. But you're a head coach in the D League. Tell me, what do you remember about your first team with the Dakota Wizards?
I was excited to be a head coach again. Like you said, I'd been a high school head coach, assistant coach. I've always gone kind of back and forth of that in my career. And I just remember, you know, after we won the championship with the Iowa Energy, you know, there was some job opportunities for me to become a head coach. And the Golden State Warriors at that time owned the Dakota Wizards. And Bismarck, North Dakota had a great tradition for minor league basketball, the CBA, the D-League. So it was an honor. I was thrilled to be able to coach that team, and I still stay in touch with those players to this day. And then they moved us to Santa Cruz, California the next year, which was another awesome head coaching job in the D-League. So all of my stops, I've been very honored and thrilled to coach those teams.
Obviously, then you went to the Suns and most notably to the Raptors. What about the Raptors culture? Like, you're part of the culture, really, of the Warriors program when you were with the Santa Cruz Warriors and obviously the Wizards. And then with the Raptors, like, there's something special about an organization that can have that kind of turnover with their star players and with head coaches and still maintain the level of success. What is it about what they have in Toronto, which you're going to try and sort of replicate in Indiana?
I love that question. And that's exactly what I felt the first second I walked in here in Indianapolis. Here is in Toronto, you could feel it. The entire organization was all in. They were really starving for a championship. You know, they had had some success in the playoffs. They had some early exits in the playoffs, but they knew they were on the verge of they were wanting to do something great. And you could feel it from Masai and Bobby, Coach Nurse, and the entire organization. Everybody was all in, sticking together on the quest for a championship. And that is the same feeling. I'm telling you, there's a lot of similarities here. That is the same feeling I had here in Indiana. Not only on my like Zoom interview call and my in-person interviews here in Indianapolis, but even on meeting people and the feel around the practice facility, you know, where I am right now, there's just a great sense of togetherness and wanting to get after it.
When you had your Zoom call with the Pacers, what was your background? Did you go with the beach background or did you go with the El Natural background?
I kind of just go with the plain wall background, so I keep it very simple.
Very, very, very simple. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but KP, Kevin Pritchard, who's, you know, your boss, president of basketball operations, you know, he was the head coach in the ABA 2000, right? Like, you want to talk, and I don't know if you know that they had a cool rule in that league. It helped me score points, and here's what it was. If you got a steal from a in the backcourt or a pass that started in the backcourt, you got an extra point. and the scoreboard would light up. So if you got a steal, you come down, you hit a three, it's 4 points. You get a layup, it's 3 points.
I love it. We need that's what we need to do in the NBA. Right. We need more of those rules. I love that.
When did you know? Like there was, I mean, this was a job which they opened up. They talked to a lot of people. When did you know?
Well, it felt good the whole way. I mean, it was a month-long process, and I didn't know until day 29, day 30. I mean, really, it was, I had a lot of time in between things. Like, for example, I told you about that Zoom call. It was about an hour and 15 minutes, hour and 20 minutes. Then there was about 9 or 10 days in between my in-person interview.
Wait, can I interrupt real quick before you get to that? When you got done with a Zoom call, like,
yep.
I'm sure your wife came in, how'd it go, right? And like, how did you actually literally think it went?
I thought it went great. And here's what happened. So I loved it that you asked that. I shut my computer down, closed my computer, and I just had some notes kind of next to me, just a few like bullet points of just things I wanted to make sure that I said. You know, and I said everything how I wanted to say, and I thought it had a great flow. Like you talk about Kevin Pritchard and coaching it, and Chad Buchanan and Kelly Crossup, they've all, you know, coached it and played it, and it was a nice basketball flow or rhythm to the call. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I did. I shut my computer down, and I said, man, it felt great. And then sure enough, about 2 or 3 hours later, that same day, they called me and said, we want to bring you in to Indianapolis.
Okay, so now the big question is the roster, right? Now, you've worked with T.J. Yep. Warren before going back to the Phoenix days, and obviously he's like yep. a walking bucket. That guy can yep. score. I think everybody, if healthy, loves Malcolm Brogdon. The big question is Victor Oladipo coming back yep. off a really tough injury, kind of an up-and-down reentry to the NBA. What is your sense of what roster you're going to be presented with?
The roster that I have, and you named it right there. I love the makeup of this team. You know, like this team's ready. They've been in the playoffs. They've won a lot of regular season games. They are ready to make the next move. That's why I compare it to that first year with the Toronto Raptors there a little bit. But it's a smart group of players. They have that experience, and they're just ready to, you know, take it up a notch. And they're all ready to go. I've spoken to them all. I'm going to go see them all, and they are. I like the sound of them. I enjoyed coaching against them, and I'm very much going to enjoy coaching them here in Indiana.
Okay, so what did you guys find a house? You're still house hunting? Where are you in the house? Look.
No, I haven't gotten that far yet. So I'm just here about a block away from the arena and the practice facility, which is great for me. I've been spending my time here just. Like what you said, with the players and the staff and just getting ready to go here first off.
Okay, I just didn't, you know, like, so, like, is there anything in your refrigerator at all? Like, you have, like, one of those executive apartments and there's coffee or do you have the coffee? Is there anything in that fridge?
You know exactly where there is one bottle of water in that fridge and it might be, like, half drank. So, it's, one bottle of water.
Have you had that moment yet to where you walk around, you're like, okay, my first head coaching job was in Iowa in high school. I was then in Arizona in high school. I was an unpaid assistant for the Iowa Energy. Now I'm the head coach of the Indiana Pacers. Have you had that moment yet?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm honored and proud to coach this team. And like you said, all those stops I had along the way, I did. I really tried to coach like everything I possibly could, you know, summer league and D league and tryouts and just anything that, you know, I could get my hands on to coach. And that's where Nick Nurse was so great to me. So you go back to when I was his volunteer assistant 14 years ago, he gave me a ton of responsibility from day one. And he's so great with allowing his players to grow. He does the same thing with his coaching staff, and he did. He really gave me a ton of opportunity. And this is something that I've wanted for a long time. And now, to me, this is just the beginning.
All right, here's the biggest question. Coaching in the NBA, are X and O's important? Sure. Defensive rotations important? Absolutely. But the big thing is you got to get the guys to buy in, right? To buy into mm-hmm. what you say, what you believe in. You know, if they don't do that, it doesn't work. How do you do that as a guy who, like, you're by all accounts, you're a delightful human being, and but you didn't play in the NBA, right? You haven't coached before in the NBA, so you've been an assistant on a championship team. How do you do that? How do you get guys to buy into what you want them to do?
Yep, you have to earn their trust. And like the number one thing about that, though, is they want to know how you're going to make them a better player. And they should know that. They should question that. How am I going to make you better? And then in part, it just makes our whole team better. But you have to know how to manage energy. You have to be prepared. But you're right. I'd say, you know, it's 20% of it is the X's and O's, like you said. 80% of it is knowing that they can trust you and you care about them and you care about what's happening in their lives and you want to be there for them. But you earn that trust and you get that confidence, and then the sky's the limit on that.
What does it say about the NBA that you had two guys coaching in the NBA Finals who, you know, their path different than yours, but similar in that, you know, grinders, right? Both started kind of in the video room, but, you know, both started low end of the totem pole and end up in the finals and in Frank Vogel and Eric Spoelstra. What does that say about the job?
It means a lot. This is a very, very good job. There's 30 of them in the NBA, like you mentioned, and there's so many great coaches out there, and you got to work extremely hard to get into these positions. So you're exactly right. It's a grind. It's the amount of work that you put in, and it's nonstop. Right. It is constant readiness. So I've enjoyed it, and like I said, I'm very honored to be able to coach against the coach in this league.
Last and most important thing, why is it called Storm Lake? Are there always storms coming off the Storm Lake, your hometown, where you went to college as well? Why is it like, is it the abyss? Like, what is going on in the lake that it's Storm Lake?
There's a beautiful lake there, a beautiful lake called Storm Lake. It's about, 11 feet deep in the deepest point, but it's it's a great lake, and maybe it was. Maybe a long time ago, the storms and a ton of rain started that, right. But it is.
Nice little town of 10,000. Who knew that Iowa, I thought Iowa produced, you know, cornfields, baseball, you know, baseball stories, and of course, wrestlers. I didn't know it was such a wellspring for coaching talent, but apparently it is. Nate, we wish you nothing but success. Enjoy this short-lived offseason. Congrats on getting the job, and thanks so much for spending time with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation, so thank you very much.
Pleasure is mine. Nate Bjorken joined us, the head coach of the Indiana Pacers.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.